From ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Lou Adler, ABC News. Listen.
There were many times I did lose faith. I did lose hope.
We were able to arrest the murder of James Jordan and incarcerate him.
It was just one right after another. Boom, 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 boom.
I jumped up and down, and I screamed, and I yelled, and I got goosebumps, and I was happy.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's world news.
What is a man? A man stands up for himself. He relies on his own strength, makes his own breaks, and he has the right to a fighting chance in life. Doesn't a baby just starting life deserve the same fighting chance? If you're a man with a woman who's pregnant, it's up to you to help make sure the baby gets one. Help the woman you're with get the care she needs. If she doesn't, the baby may be born sick or too early. So small and so helpless it can hardly hang on to life, let alone fight. Every man has the power to give a helpless child a fighting chance. Call 1-800-232-3237 for help. 1-800-232-3237. This message comes from the Department of Health and Human Services, the March of Dimes, the Ad Council, and this radio station.
There were many times I did lose faith. I did lose hope.
You can certainly understand why Harvey Weinstein felt that way. For 12 days, the owner of the country's largest maker of tuxedos was a victim of kidnappers. One of them, one of his own employees. The 68-year-old millionaire had been grabbed after eating breakfast not far from his factory in the Queens section of New York. He was forced to drive to a wooded area just off one of Manhattan's busiest highways. Then he was chained in a 14-foot-deep pit.
I begged and pleaded with my captors to take me out, to shoot me, and leave me on the road where my family would find my body and I could be buried properly next to my parents.
But the kidnappers wanted him alive and gave him fruit and water while they tried to get a $3 million ransom from his family. Weinstein dug deep into his past to the days when he was a Marine wedged in a foxhole during World War II, and he used that experience to survive.
I'm therefore eternally indebted and so proud to have been able to serve my country, which in turn saved my life.
During the 12 days, the kidnappers made repeated phone calls to the family as they tried to arrange for a payoff. The details were finalized, and right after the money was delivered, the police and FBI closed in. They got the kidnappers. They got the money. And New York Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly said the search for Weinstein's underground prison was on.
Finally, they heard a response, "I'm here." But they couldn't find the exact location. Digging through the dirt with their hands, they uncovered a plywood plank with a steel door held down by cinder blocks. Beneath the door, alive, was Harvey Weinstein.
He was grimy. He was 15 pounds thinner, and the first thing he asked for was a cigarette. The ex-Marine joked about that during a news conference.
What the anti-smoking lobby is going to do with me. I've set him back 10 years.
Weinstein also was able to joke about the early part of the kidnapping.
I told him I had the wrong guy. When I was first taken, they talked about a $5 million ransom. I added up my checking account, and I felt I was going to be a little bit short.
There was no shortage of joy among the employees at the Lord West Formal Wear building as they welcomed their boss back, only disbelief that one of them was one of the three kidnappers. Weinstein's daily routine had made his abduction easy, but as for changing anything he does each day...
I can't permit fear to govern my life. I will walk proudly in the streets of New York. I will eat where I choose, when I choose, and I will not be looking over my shoulder every 30 seconds to see who's behind me. I can't live that way, and I won't.
Good police work cracked the Weinstein kidnapping, and good police work enabled Sheriff Morris Bedsell of Cumberland County, North Carolina, to make this announcement.
We were able to arrest the murder of James Jordan and incarcerate them.
The arrests of the two 18-year-old North Carolina men came just a couple of days after a body found in a South Carolina creek was positively identified as being that of the father of basketball superstar Michael Jordan. James Jordan had not been heard from since going to a friend's funeral in late July. Sheriff's Captain Art Binder says Jordan was on his way from visiting his friend's widow when he was killed.
Mr. Jordan had pulled off the side of the road to rest for a while, and he was shot to death while in his car and was taken to the state of South Carolina and placed into the swamp where he was found.
Joe Schulte of the FBI, which had joined the case, says the teenagers had not targeted Jordan because of who he was.
These men were waiting to commit a robbery, and Mr. Jordan just happened to be the victim.
Jordan had been driving a Lexus loaded with options, and Captain Binder says it was one of those options that helped crack the case.
One thing that helped us most in the investigation was that the car that they kept for several days had a cellular telephone in it, and we were successful in tracking them through the telephone calls that they were placing.
Michael Jordan says, like other people who've lost a loved one, he's coping.
I'm doing fine. I'm doing really good. I'm strong mentally and strong physically, and I just got to move forward.
Four other young men have been charged with stripping his father's car. They are not accused in the murder. A close call for Dr. George Tiller. He runs an abortion clinic in Wichita, Kansas. Tiller and his clinic were targets of Operation Rescue's protests a couple of years ago, and as Police Chief Rick Stone says, the doctor was a target again.
As Dr. Tiller was exiting the clinic, as he was driving from the clinic property, he was approached by a white female armed with a small caliber semi-automatic handgun who fired multiple shots at the doctor.
Vanessa Coker saw it happen.
It was just one right after another. Boom, 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 boom.
The doctor was hit in both arms, but the wounds were not serious. A woman police believe did the shooting was arrested in Oklahoma City, some 160 miles from Wichita, when she turned in a rental car. Police Captain Billy City says Rachel Shannon has been involved with protests at other clinics.
She does have two outstanding warrants on her from San Francisco and Milwaukee, where she is wanted in reference to trespassing at clinics there.
At Dr. Tiller's clinic, one of the employees, Peggy Thompson, is worried.
It scares me to death now that I think about it, because, I mean, I didn't think that people would stoop this low to do something to somebody like that.
Members of anti-abortion rights groups, like Wendy Wright of Operation Rescue, are putting some distance between themselves and that incident.
What Operation Rescue is fighting for is for our society to come to respect human life. So this shooting is actually the opposite of what we are fighting for.
As for intimidating Dr. Tiller, one of his aides says that won't happen.
We are determined to move forward, and we will be providing abortion services to our patients. We will not turn back.
Meantime, the head of the National Organization for Women, Patricia Ireland, thinks the federal government ought to get more involved.
We have not seen the White House and the Justice Department taking this into account as domestic terrorism under the jurisdiction of the FBI.
So far, arrests made during protests at abortion clinics have been handled at the local level. There's a fight for life going on at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, where doctors performed a complicated operation to separate twin girls who were joined at the chest. The seven twins shared a common heart, and doctors had told the parents that only one girl, Angela, could be saved. The mother said she understood.
I feel fine. I'm Angela.
But missing Amy.
But missing Amy. I'm proud of both of my girls.
Chief Surgeon James O'Neill is keeping his fingers crossed for Angela.
I hope that over the next several days that you will hear favorable news. At least we'll pray for that.
Medical ethics experts question the wisdom of the operation, wondering if its high cost and high risk are worth it. Dr. Jack Kevorkian believes the repeated assistance he has given to people wishing to commit suicide is the right thing to do.
I will continue to help suffering patients no matter what, as long as I'm free to do so. And I welcome any doctors come forward and work with me and criticize me, and let's lay out the guidelines the way they should be. Nobody else can do it.
Kevorkian became the first person to be charged under a new Michigan law banning assisted suicides after he helped a man with Lou Gehrig's disease kill himself earlier this month. The county prosecutor in Detroit, John O'Hare, says Kevorkian's approach is all wrong.
Despite sharing Dr. Kevorkian's desire for Michigan to resolve the issue of assisted suicide, I, as prosecutor for this county, cannot permit Dr. Kevorkian's disregard for the law without any consequences whatever.
Kevorkian has assisted in 17 suicides in Michigan. He's hoping for a show trial to focus more attention on his cause. Kimberly Mays hoped that a court would listen to her, and when it did...
I jumped up and down, and I screamed, and I yelled, and I got goosebumps, and I was happy.
Kimberly is the 14-year-old who was switched at birth in a Florida hospital. The mistake was discovered in 1988 when the girl her natural parents took home died, and genetic tests showed that she was not their daughter. When they discovered that Kimberly was theirs, they sought to be reunited. Kimberly wanted no part of it and went to court to divorce her natural parents. While sidestepping the divorce request, the judge ruled that the man who raised Kimberly was her legal father and that if she did not want to have any contact with her natural parents, she didn't have to. They have promised to appeal. The first case involving a child's desire to divorce his natural parents was that of Gregory Kingsley. He won that fight, and that decision has been upheld, but a Florida appeals court has now reversed the lower court's decision granting his adoption by a foster family. Ironically, the boy's foster father is George Russ, the lawyer who represented Kimberly Mays. The boy's attorney, Jerry Blair, says the case has been complicated by the latest ruling.
Depending on what happens next, he could either remain in the Russ's home as a foster child, or the adoption could be done depending on whether this goes any further in the appellate courts.
In another case involving children in the courts, a jury in Minneapolis has awarded $5.2 million to the natural father of an 11-year-old boy who died of diabetes. The boy's Christian Scientist mother and stepfather had tried to treat his illness with prayer instead of insulin. The health of all Americans is the priority of the Clinton administration, and the president plugged his plans to reform health care coverage before the National Governors Conference in Tulsa.
We've got to provide health care security to people who don't have it. That means not just those who don't have health insurance coverage now, but those who are at risk of losing it.
The president would like to see all employers provide insurance coverage for their workers. The head of the American Medical Association, Dr. James Todd, would like a few more details.
A lot of things he didn't say. Very slow talking about how it's going to be paid for. Employer mandate where every employer would have to supply insurance to their employees, something the AMA has been in favor of. President Clinton is in favor of it. Hasn't quite worked out the details.
Senate Republican leader Bob Dole also raised questions when he spoke to the governors.
Our primary concern centers around the role of the federal government as a regulator, especially the prospect of the government imposing employer mandates. And if federal regulations mean one-size-fits-all health care policy, there may be fewer opportunities for states to test approaches on their own, just as you're doing now in many, many states.
Details of the president's health care plan are scheduled to be released next month. The Middle East pot is simmering again. In Iraq, U.S. planes pounded an anti-aircraft site in the so-called no-fly zone in the northern part of the country. The Pentagon says the Iraqis fired missiles at the planes. Iraq says the U.S. jets fired first. Israel and the pro-Iranian Hezbollah guerrillas were at it again. Hezbollah killed 8 Israeli soldiers in Israel's self-styled security zone in southern Lebanon. Israel retaliated with airstrikes. How will all this play against the backdrop of the resuming peace talks? Some ideas from ABC's Peter Allen Frost in Tel Aviv.
The latest incident is unlikely to cause Israel to change its political posture over the peace talks. Officials here say Israel will continue the dialogue with the Arab states and the Palestinians, at the same time taking what were termed the necessary military measures to ensure the safety of troops in southern Lebanon and civilians along the northern frontier.
Israel is still caught up in the John Demjanjuk case. The country's chief justice has blocked his deportation. ABC's Ron Allen in Tel Aviv tells us why and for how long.
He has given the accusers of John Demjanjuk about 2 weeks to come up with better arguments. During the trial, Demjanjuk was found not guilty of being Ivan the Terrible of Treblinka, but there was also a lot of evidence presented that he may have been a prison guard at other death camps, and that is what the Holocaust survivors and the Nazi war hunters here want him tried for.
Demjanjuk's family wants him to be returned to this country where he lived before being sent to Israel for trial. There's a legal battle going on over that. Was the African nation of Sudan linked to the suspects in the World Trade Center bombing and the plot to bomb UN headquarters and other targets in New York? ABC's Karen Burns says an investigation indicates that Sudan did support a terrorist network whose plans reached far and wide.
Sources tell us that this network had plans to execute other terrorist operations inside the United States, perhaps in New York, perhaps in other cities, as well as Europe and in Israel. These are plans that they have been monitoring for some time now, or they've been aware of for some time. It's a little bit difficult to infiltrate terrorist cells, but they have been aware that this network has had plans to conduct other operations in those other areas.
ABC News identified two Sudanese diplomats as being involved. Sudan has denied any involvement, although a former cabinet minister, Farouk Abu Issa, claims otherwise.
When they used to tell people that they are not training these terrorists in Sudan, I tell you that they are liars.
The State Department believes it has enough evidence to make the link and has cited Sudan as a sponsor of terrorism for letting radical groups use its territory. Radical factions opposed to the government of Egypt made a bold attack, setting off a bomb near Cairo's busiest square, apparently in an attempt to assassinate the Egyptian interior minister. The minister was wounded and went on Egyptian TV from his hospital bed to denounce the attack. The radical Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman calls for the violent overthrow of the Egyptian government, and Egypt wants him deported from the U.S. to stand trial for inciting a riot to that end. Now, the Sheikh's lawyer, Barbara Nelson, says the Muslim cleric would like to leave the U.S., maybe for Afghanistan.
He wants to explore the options. He definitely does not want to go back to Egypt. His life is in danger if he returns to Egypt, so he would like to explore other options.
U.S. courts have upheld Immigration Department decisions that the Sheikh should be deported. Now his lawyers are trying to sell the government on the idea of letting the Sheikh decide the destination. President Clinton is trying to sell the idea that the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, is good for America.
This agreement means more trade, more exports, and more jobs for the United States. I think it is very much in our national interest.
But, as ABC's Herbert Kaplow says,
the president acknowledges it's going to be a tough sell getting the North American Free Trade Agreement through Congress. He said as much after introducing his newest appointment, Bill Daley of Chicago, to lead the NAFTA effort. The problem is that this time he doesn't have the strong support from fellow Democrats that he got, for instance, in winning congressional passage of his budget.
Just as the selling job got into high gear, last month's trade figures came up, and they showed the deficit jumped more than 40% to its biggest gap in 6 years. Not good, says economist Erwin Kellner of Chemical Bank.
It will give ammunition to those who claim that a free trade agreement will result in more jobs being lost in the United States as U.S. consumers buy cheaper goods made, in this case, in Mexico.
Grinding coffee beans like these may get more expensive if the world's major coffee-producing nations have their way. Taking a cue from OPEC, the countries have decided to form a cartel. They want to cut coffee supplies on October 1st to drive up prices. There's frustration in the apple orchards of Washington State these days. The crop's getting ripe, but those apples aimed for shipment to Japan could never leave the country. Japan says the crop doesn't meet its standards for pest control. Just so much applesauce, says Jim Thomas of the Washington State Apple Association.
The Japanese apple growers do not want competition in their country. Right now they're fetching upwards of $5 per apple in Japanese supermarkets for their products. So they don't want the competition. So what the government there is doing for them is using pests as a reason to keep other apples out. Now our apples don't have any pest problems. We ship to 24 countries around the world, including many in the Pacific Rim.
The apple farmers are talking about smashing Japanese VCRs and TVs in symbolic retaliation. Big question in Michigan these days. How are they going to pay for their schools now that Governor John Engler has signed the largest tax cut in state history? The $6.3 billion in property tax relief comes at the expense of funding for schools, and Michigan teachers are going to court.
This is not asking the court to come up with a plan. It's asking the court to order the state of Michigan to determine a method to replace the revenue.
Some ideas being kicked around: higher income and sales taxes. A jury in Los Angeles has heard opening arguments in the trial of two black men accused in the beating of Reginald Denny. You may have seen the incident on TV. Denny was the white truck driver who was dragged from his rig in the early stages of last year's Los Angeles riot. In his opening statement, Deputy District Attorney Lawrence Morrison reminded the jury that Denny was not the only person who was beaten.
While many of us have come to hear about this case being referred to as the Reginald Denny case, in quotes, it is not just about Reginald Denny. This is the case of those eight citizens, like Mr. Denny, victimized at the case. at that intersection.
Edie Fowle represents one of the defendants.
There is no room for emotion. There is no room for passion. There is no room for sympathy. You are not to decide this case based on sympathy for Mr. Denny or anyone else.
The trial resumes on Monday. Rodney King, whose beating by white police officers triggered the riots, was back in police custody for a while. King was arrested for drunk driving early Saturday after he ran his car into a wall in downtown Los Angeles. He's free in his own recognizance. Amid all the troubles of the world, sanctuary for the thousands who attended last weekend's huge outdoor mass in Cherry Creek State Park near Denver. Yeah. During his address to the 400,000 worshipers, Pope John Paul departed from the prepared text of his speech, scaling back his criticism of American moral values in favor of accentuating the positive.
Life and love, are inseparable.
ABC's Chuck Sievertson was in the crowd.
The Pope is saying goodbye, and this huge crowd is waving back their hands over their heads. Some of them are waving their hats, and they needed them today because it was such a bright, sunny day in the upper 80s. Many cases of dehydration, thousands of people carried out of here, some on stretchers. Right now, the choir is singing, the band playing. Some people are waving flags from their nations. People behind me chanting, some of them chanting, "We love you, we love you."
Vice President Gore saw the Pope off at the airport.
As I take my leave of the United States, I express my gratitude to you, Mr. Vice President, who are here to say goodbye, and to President Clinton, who kindly welcomed me on my arrival, for the courtesy I have received at every stage of this visit.
Courtesies for a president, when World News This Week continues in a moment.
When they brought the baby home, she was beautiful and tiny and perfect. And they made sure their home was the most wonderful place any baby would ever be. Every little thing said, "We care for you. We'll protect you. We love you." But there was a terrible threat they couldn't see. Poisonous lead that hides in dust, in paint, in drinking water. And a child can eat it, drink it, even breathe it. In fact, one out of six preschoolers has high levels of lead in their blood. This is Felicia Rashad, urging you to find out how a few simple steps can help protect your family from the dangers of lead. Call 1-800-532-3394. Do it now. Lead turns up in every type of home, and it can cause serious problems. Poor performance in school, problems paying attention, even brain damage. Call 1-800-532-3394.
A message from the Environmental Protection Agency and the National Safety Council.
Even old hands on Martha's Vineyard are impressed.
There are celebrities around all the time, and I think the president is a different story, and I think everybody here is excited about it. Obviously, this is no ordinary celebrity.
President Clinton and family are spending 11 days vacation on the island off the Massachusetts shore, a little swimming, a little golf. And speaking of golf, one of the pros at the Farm Neck Club, John Holenko, says the president may be the president, but when it comes down to who gets to play...
Being a semi-private club, the members pretty much need to have their times. If you know what I mean. We really couldn't close down even if we wanted to. They would revolt.
And those are the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Longin. Engineering by Harold Hodge. I'm Lou Adler, ABC News, New York.
More Americans get their news from ABC News than from any other source.